السلام علیکم ورحمۃ اللہ. اشهد ان لا اله الا الله وحده لا شريك له واشهد ان محمدا عبده ورسوله اما بعد فاعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
The promised Messiah, on whom be peace, has mentioned five branches connected to his advent. One of them is the publication of pamphlets. In other words, the publication of leaflets for tabligh, for preaching, to firmly establish the arguments and proof for people. The promised Messiah, on whom be peace, says, "Today I have decided to publish 40 pamphlets to firmly establish the arguments and claim for the opponents and deniers, so that on the day of judgment I can submit to God the Almighty that I have fulfilled the mission that I was sent for." The promised Messiah, on whom be peace, did not just publish a few posters and leaflets on a single occasion. Indeed, we observe that from even before his claim up until his demise, the promised Messiah, on whom be peace, published a huge amount of pamphlets. These are all published and available to read, and they constitute a treasure for the religious world. The promised Messiah, on whom be peace, had an intense passion to save Muslims, Christians, and people of other religions from ruin. He would work alone, tirelessly and relentlessly towards this task. Although he published major works of literature, the promised Messiah, on whom be peace, zealous compassion for humanity and fervor to reform mankind can also be seen through the small pamphlets he published. To maintain this passion to help reform the world and to further this mission is also the responsibility of the members of the Jamaat, the community of the promised Messiah, on whom be peace. Hence, we need to give constant attention to this task. Discoursing on the need to have agony and passion for Islam and the exceptional efforts one needs to expend for it, Hadhrat Musleh Maud, may Allah be pleased with him, says in one place, "We have before us the example of the promised Messiah, on whom be peace. Despite his illness, he would remain engrossed in his efforts day and night and would publish leaflet after leaflet and poster after poster. People were left astonished observing the promised Messiah's work. He would publish one leaflet and its effect had not yet died down, and the opposition was still in a frenzy when he would publish the next leaflet. Some would even say to the promised Messiah that to publish the next leaflet at such a time would have a detrimental effect. But the promised Messiah, on whom be peace, was completely unconcerned, and he said that one can only strike when the iron is hot. Thus, when the effect of one leaflet started to diminish, he would immediately publish the next one. And this is why his posters and pamphlets would raise a storm of opposition. He worked tirelessly day and night, and this indeed is the path of success. Only if we adopt this approach can we also be successful. Our concern should not be to wait for opposition to lessen. Pamphlets should be published in parallel to opposition because this is what will have an impact. Then Hazrat Musleh Maud, may Allah be pleased with him, referring to the lifetime of the promised Messiah, alayhi salatu wassalam, says, "In the life of the promised Messiah, on whom be peace, tabligh, or preaching, was also done through leaflets and pamphlets, which would consist of 2 to 4 pages each. They were published in large numbers and caused a commotion in the entire country. In those days, publishing 1 or 2,000 was considered a large number." Hazrat Musleh Maud says, "At times, 10,000 leaflets were even published. However, our Jamaat is now 20 times bigger. And so in the current era, propagation through leaflets would constitute publishing 50,000 or in fact 100,000 leaflets each time. Observe thereafter how these leaflets draw the attention of people. If in the first year 12 leaflets a year are published, however, after even 2 or 3 leaflets are published annually consisting of a few pages each, but printed in quantities of 1 or 200,000 each, the huge effect they will cause will become evident." Hazur says, 3 or 4 years ago, I directed the Jamaats to produce small pamphlets for tabligh, propagation. And I also gave a target to print them in their hundreds of thousands, as through this the world would come to know of the beautiful teachings of Islam. The world would receive the message of the reality of Islam. The world would attain the message that in this era, Allah the Almighty sent the promised Messiah, on whom be peace, to revive Islam, who rejuvenated the true teachings of Islam. The world would come to know that even today, Allah the Almighty sends His chosen one to provide the means to God's servants to attain salvation from Satan. Nevertheless, those Jamaats that made efforts towards this task of leafleting also witnessed extremely positive results with the grace of the Almighty Allah. I sent the Jamia students to Spain and they worked excellently there to distribute nearly 300,000 of different type of pamphlets. Similarly, the Jamia Canada students went to Spanish-speaking countries and to Mexico, where they distributed leaflets. And with the grace of the Almighty Allah, the field of tabligh has greatly expanded through this, and there have been bets, initiations into the Ahmadiyya Muslim community. Hence, small leaflets should be published one after the other and distributed, rather than distributing large books. Explaining what type of leaflet should be published, Hazrat Musleh Maud has said in this connection that some people wish to publish pamphlets on their own accord. Hazrat says this was true at that time and is also true today also. Although they cannot publish such large numbers on their own, in any case, there are people who wish to publish some quantity of leaflets on their own. So Hazrat Musleh Maud says, however, only the leaflets published from the markaz, the center, should be distributed and their quantity of printing increased. Sometimes publishing posters and pamphlets on one's own can lead to self-conceit because a person may only do so for self-projection. This is such a serious illness that the promised Messiah, on whom be peace, would relate a story with regards to how some only wish to enhance their self-importance. The story is that a woman had a ring made for herself. However, no other woman praised her ring. And so one day, she set fire to her own home. When people gathered together, she said, "Nothing remains except for my ring." So someone asked her, "When did you get this ring made?" To which the lady replied, "If only anyone had asked me this before, I wouldn't have burnt my house down." And so the moral of the story is that the self-projection is such a disease that one who is afflicted with it is completely devoured by it in a manner that they do not even realize. Self-projection and conceit do not only emerge with relation to pamphlets, but rather in any matter when one longs for and makes efforts to attain fame and establish the self-importance, it also emerges. This never gives benefit, rather it only incurs far greater loss and harm. Today, the scope of tabligh has expanded so widely that an individual person who wishes to publish leaflets through personal means would only be able to publish a nominal amount. Nonetheless, people do express their achievements in a vain way in some manner or the other within their own circles. It is not necessarily always out of self-conceit, but often people relate their activities with good intentions. Hence, where people are publishing material themselves in a good way, then it should be increased and its scope expanded if they deem it to be something good. Hence, if anyone has a beneficial idea in their mind which can improve how leaflets are made and can better attract the attention of people, and it consists of strong material and subject matter, then they should notify the Jamaat's Nizam, the Jamaat's system and administration. If it is worthy, then the Jamaat's Nizam will publish it. Now I will present various narrations of Hadhrat Musleh Maud, may Allah be pleased with him, relating to various accounts of the companions and of the promised Messiah. In one place he writes, "When stones were being hurled at the martyrs of Afghanistan, they would not become apprehensive or anxious. Instead, they accepted the stoning with steadfastness and bravery. When the stoning became extremely intense, Sahibzada Abdul Latif Sahib Shaheed, Nimutullah Khan Sahib, and other martyrs would only say, 'O Allah, have mercy upon these people and grant them guidance.' The fact of the matter is, when one has heartfelt devotion and love, it transforms him completely. His words have great impact, and the rays of spiritual light radiating from his face attracts others to him." Hadhrat Musleh Maud says further, "I remember that thousands of people came here to Qadian during the lifetime of the promised Messiah, and observing his countenance would say, 'This cannot be the face of a liar.' Without hearing a single word from the promised Messiah, alayhi salam, they chose to believe in him." Hazur says, "We witness similar examples today also. I receive many letters in which people write that after seeing the photo of the promised Messiah, on whom be peace, they knew he could not be a liar, and therefore they took the bet, the oath of allegiance." Then Hadhrat Musleh Maud, may Allah be pleased with him, says, "I heard the promised Messiah, on whom be peace, say on many occasions that there are three types of people in our Jamaat. There are three types of people in our Jamaat. The first are those who, having properly reflected on and understood my message and claim, accepted it. In that era, Islam was in a dire state, and the Muslims were dispersed and completely scattered. Thus, there were numerous categories of people of different mentalities and temperaments, and among them, people accepted Ahmadiyyat when they saw the claim of the promised Messiah and the community being established. So here, the promised Messiah alayhi salam is depicting the state of these people when he says, "There are three types of people found in our community. The first are those who, having properly reflected on and understood my message, accepted it. They are fully conversed with the purpose of my advent, and they understand that they are required to make sacrifices as a community in the same way the communities of the previous prophets did also. However, there is another group who only joined our community because of Hazrat Maulvi Nuruddin Sahib. They are not familiar with the purpose of the coming of the promised Messiah. Rather, they only joined after Hazrat Maulvi Nuruddin took the bet with the promised Messiah. As Maulvi Nuruddin Sahib was their teacher, was noble and wise, they thought, since Maulvi Sahib has become an Ahmadi, let us also become an Ahmadi. And so, this group of people are connected to our community by virtue of Hazrat Maulvi Nuruddin Sahib. They do not comprehend the purpose of the movement and the wisdom and the objective of my advent. In addition, there is a third body of people who joined our community consisting of some youth, who although were passionate towards Islam, they possessed a national affiliation towards Islam rather than a religious one. They wanted a focal point for the Muslims. Observing the sorry state of the Muslims, they desired for there to be a united body of Muslims. So such people also joined the Jamaat at that time. When this section later realized that there was a greater emphasis on religion and spirituality in the community, they separated themselves from it. At different points during the era of the second Khilafat, many of this category of people left the community. We observe nowadays also the misguided passion in young Muslims who mistakenly joined certain terrorist organizations. This is also solely because they feel that there should be a national unifying strength for the Muslims. Or they believe that there should be a group which understands the national identity of the Muslims. However, they have no knowledge of the religion whatsoever, and this is also proven from certain reports from Iraq and Syria that mention that when questioned that their actions are contrary to the Quran and the Hadith, these people reply that we are not aware of this, however, we have to follow what we are told, and we have to maintain the individual identity we have formed in the name of Islam. So there are people of this manner who also exist. In any case, the promised Messiah on whom be peace says further, they desire to be united as a nation and form a group for this. They wished for there to be organizations and to establish schools. And all of this they want to do on a national level. But as it was impossible for them to form a collective unity among the general Muslims, they instead, seeing our strength and unity, turn towards us to join. Now they wish to establish schools and madrasas so people attain degrees. This is why they join our community, considering it to be an anjuman, just an organization, and not a religion. Hence, the means to progress in worldly matters are completely separate to the means of progress in religious matters. An anjuman, organization, progresses differently to the way a religion progresses. For a religion to progress, moral reformation is essential, and one must attain the highest moral standards. The spirit of sacrifice must be developed. One must pray to enhance their spirituality, must keep fast, must have complete reliance in Allah the Almighty, and pledge to submit to and obey Him entirely. If we implement all of this, then in the eyes of the world, we will be insane. However, in the sight of Allah the Almighty, we will be the wisest amongst people. The Quran relates that when Muslims offer financial sacrifices, the hypocrites declare that the Muslims are foolish and that they are continuously throwing away their money. They think that the Muslims do not have any sense to spend their money on something good. Similarly, when Muslims sacrifice their time, the hypocrites say, the Muslims are foolish because they are wasting their time and have removed all hope of progress and success for themselves. And so, they either call the Muslims foolish or declared them mad. Although these are the two names they call Muslims by, yet observe how these very foolish and very mad people became the teachers for the wise of the world. Thus, our Jamaat must adopt this same foolish and mad approach, which disbelievers declared as foolish and mad. Unless we adopt this, we will never attain success. If you want to resort to lies at a time of need, to resort to fraud at a time of need, to resort to deception at a time of need, if you want to resort to backbiting and speaking ill of others at a time of need, and if you hope to derive benefit from all of this, then remember clearly, you will never gain the benefit and success through these means that was promised to the promised Messiah on whom be peace. These things may be useful for organizations of the world, cheating, fraud, backbiting, slandering and duping or misleading others may be the way of worldly organizations, but they remove the blessings from faith. Such actions in fact cause Allah the Almighty's curse to descend upon a person. And so all these things, such as high morals and spiritual progress, should be found in religious communities. Therefore, every single Ahmadi needs to greatly increase their standards of honesty and spirituality. While narrating an incident regarding the background of the establishment and need of the Talimul Islam High School, Hadhrat Musleh Maud, may Allah be pleased with him, says, there was a time when Talimul Islam College was established. Hazur says, at that time, when it was just an idea for the college, it was being discussed that they would require many hundreds of thousands of rupees immediately and many hundreds of thousands in income in order to run the college. Big plans were being made with costs of hundreds of thousands. So at that time, Hadhrat Musleh Maud says, there was a time when it was difficult for us to run the higher classes. There was a middle school here in Qadian belonging to the Aryas. In the beginning, our boys started studying there, and the Arya teachers started giving lectures before them that they should not eat meat, as Hindus do not eat meat, and they said that eating meat is cruel. They used to raise such objections, which were in fact attacks against Islam. The boys would return from the school and related these objections. Hadhrat Musleh Maud says that there was a government primary school here in Qadian, and many teachers here were also Aryas, and they used to teach similar things. The first day when I, that is Hadhrat Musleh Maud, went to study in this primary school, and in the afternoon when my lunch arrived, I walked out of the school and sat under a nearby tree to eat. I remember clearly that day when the mutton liver was cooked and it was delivered for my lunch. At that time, the late Mia Umaruddin Sahib, the father of Mia Abdullah Sahib's father, was there. He used to study in the same school, but he studied in a higher class, and I was in year one. When I sat down to eat, he also came, and after watching me, he said, "What? Are you eating mass?" Even though he was a Muslim. The reason was that the Aryan teachers used to teach that eating meat is something very wrong. This was the first time I heard the word mas. So I did not understand that mas actually means meat. So I said that this is not mas, it is mutton liver. He then explained to me that mas means meat. Therefore, I heard the word mas for the very first time from him and heard it in such a manner as if eating mas is a very bad thing and one should refrain from it. In short, the Arya teachers used to raise such objections in their classes and the boys used to return home and used to relate these. Eventually, this matter was brought to the attention of the promised Messiah and he said that, however possible, the Jamaat should sacrifice and establish a primary school. So a primary school was established and it was considered that our Jamaat had achieved the highest possible goal by doing so. During this time, my brother-in-law, late Muhammad Ali Khan Sahib Maghfoor, migrated to Qadian. He was very keen in schools and he had established a middle school in Malher Kotle, an area. He said that, I wish that this school in Qadian is transformed into a middle school. I will close the school there in Malir and I will help here in Qadian. So it was transformed and a middle school was established in Qadian. Then afterwards, due to the enthusiasm of Nawab Muhammad Ali Sahib and Hazrat Khalifatul Masih I, it was decided that a high school should also be established there. So a high school was established, but in the beginning it was only a high school in name because the majority of those who taught there were entrance pass and some were maybe entrance fail. In any case, it was called a high school. Neither did the Jamaat have the means to spend a great amount, nor was there an idea to establish school and boarding. However, a time came when the government emphasized greatly on establishing a schools and boarding. Moreover, it was said that those who established schools and boardings should be given help. So during the Khilafat of Hadrat Khalifatul Masih I, this school, along with boarding, was also established. Then gradually the staff was improved and the number of students also increased. Before there were 150, then 300 to 400, and then 700 to 800, and this number remained consistent for a while. Now after 3 to 4 years, from 800, all of a sudden, the number of boys has advanced to 1700, and I have heard that the number of girls is over 1000. So boys and girls combined, the number reaches approximately 3000. Then the Madrasa Ahmadiyyat and the college were also established. By the grace of the Almighty Allah, with my previous appeal, the number of students started to increase in Madrasa Ahmadiyyat, and 25 to 30 students started to enroll every year. If this movement continues, then the number of students in Madrasa Ahmadiyyat and the college will be 600 to 700 or even more than that. In this way, we will attain 100 missionaries every year. Until we get such a number of missionaries every year, we cannot work effectively in the world. Hazur says, this was the minimum. Now by the grace of Allah, they are in their thousands. So Hadrat Musleh Maud says, in 1944, I laid the foundation for the college because it was time to take control of the higher education of our future generations. There was a time when people in our Jamaat had small positions and meager incomes. This indeed illustrates the history of the Jamaat, that no doubt people from colleges accepted Ahmadiyyat and entered the Jamaat, but that was considered incidental, because people of high positions and salaries were not in the Jamaat other than a few limited people. There was Abdul Rahman Sahib, the trader, Haji Ali Raka Sahib Madrasi, a great businessman, but his business collapsed. After him, Sheikh Rahmatullah Sahib came. Other than him, there was no successful businessman or tradesman in our Jamaat, and there was no major official in our community. So much so that Hadrat Khalifatul Masih I once said to me, look, Mia, according to the Holy Quran and Hadith, we find that in the beginning, prophets are not accepted by people of high status. So this is also a proof of the truthfulness of the promised Messiah, that there is no person of high status in our Jamaat. So no EAC has entered our Jamaat. According to those times, the EAC were probably assistant commissioners in government service. Such a person was considered a very senior ranked person. But Hadrat Musleh Maud says, look, now EACs roam the streets and no one even looks twice at them. But there was a time when the number of high-status people in our Jamaat was so low that Hadrat Khalifatul Masih I said, there is no person of high standing in our Jamaat at present. There was no EAC in our Jamaat. So according to that time, our Jamaat could not even manage or absorb an EAC. Hazur says, today, by the grace of Allah the Almighty, the Jamaat is running thousands of schools and colleges. And today, by the grace of Allah the Almighty, highly placed experts and officials are in the Jamaat in various countries of the world. National members of parliament of countries are Ahmadis, and they are very sincere. It is not that they are only excelling in worldly matters. In some African countries, Ahmadis have been appointed to some important ministries. So this is a bounty out of Allah the Almighty's grace. How Allah the Almighty is granting us progress. Whilst mentioning the harsh times endured by Ahmadis in the beginning, the grace of Allah the Almighty, Hadhrat Musleh Maud says, there was a time when the Jamaat was treated harshly from all directions. This is in the very early period. The Maulvis passed fatwas or edicts that murdering Ahmadis, looting their homes, seizing their properties, and marrying their women elsewhere without giving divorce are all not only permitted, but is actually a means of reward. Hazur says, this same predicament exists today, but during that time people were very poor and could be treated very harshly. So this behavior of Maulvis has always been there and exists to the present day. In that time, the severity of harshness was immense because the Jamaat was very small. So Hadhrat Musleh Maud continues, the wicked and the mischievous who wished to find ways to express their vehement desires and greed started to act upon this fatwa, this edict. Hazur says that without nikah, they made women permissible for them. So in Ahmadi houses, that is after giving them a divorce, they married them. So Hadhrat Musleh Maud says, he says that Ahmadis were forced to leave their homes and were being dismissed from their work. Their properties were forcibly seized. Many could not find deliverance from these difficulties and so were compelled to migrate. Since Qadian was the only place for them to migrate, upon their arrival, expenditure for their hospitality thus increased. At that time, the Jamaat had progressed to about 1,000 or 2,000 people, but every single one of them was being victimized by the attacks of the enemy. 1,000 or 2,000 people who are always in danger for their lives, their honor, their property, and always worried for the protection of their possessions and wealth, and who were debating people day and night and busy with altercations. So for these people to provide money for the propagation of Islam for the world and to endure the burden of hospitality of those who came to Qadian to learn the faith and endure the expenditure of the oppressed migrant brothers is an astonishing thing. Hazur says we should be aware of this history. It is not an insignificant thing. Hadhrat Musleh Maud says, thousands of people ate from the Jamaat kitchens 2 times a day. Also, the other needs of some poor people had to be administered. In Qadian, due to the high volume of people migrating and guests, other than guest houses, every house had become a guest house. Every room in the house of the promised Messiah, alayhi salam, was a permanent abode. That is, a family was living in every room, and each became its own house. Some migrant family or guest or the other stayed in any one of these. Hence, the burden was huge and was above the human strength and endurance. Every morning brought with it fresh trials and responsibilities. And every evening brought with it fresh trials and responsibilities. But the gentle breeze of Alaysallahu Bikafin Abduhu, is Allah not sufficient for His servant, annihilated all worries. And the clouds that threatened to obliterate the initial foundations of the movement, after a short while, became clouds of mercy and grace. Whenever a single drop fell from this cloud, it produced an ever-increasing noise of courage and conviction of, is Allah not sufficient for His servants? Meaning there was so much hardship, but there was faith that Allah the Almighty is sufficient for us, and inshallah the circumstances will change. Hazur says, even today in Pakistan, and particularly in other countries, there is some hardship, which is more in Pakistan. In other countries, to some degree, circumstances are difficult for Ahmadis. Despite this, they are not as helpless. They are better off financially and administratively, as well as by the grace of the Almighty Allah. And this is the expression of Allah the Almighty's bounties. Ahmadiyyat has now reached the corners of the world with the grace of Allah. Ahmadis do not migrate to collect in just one location. Rather, they have departed to all over the world. If there is hardship, then they have left for abroad. By the grace of Allah the Almighty, they attain affluence. Even where there is hardship, the voice of Alayhi Sallahu Bikafin Abduhu becomes our support even today. The langar of the promised Messiah on whom be peace is established in the corners of the world. Therefore, Allah the Almighty has never abandoned us, and if we cling on to Him, He will never abandon us in the future, inshallah, God willing. There is no doubt that sacrifices have to be offered, and every Ahmadi, by the grace of Allah the Almighty, offers these sacrifices. But every sacrifice shows us a new way by grasping the bounties of Allah the Almighty. When Allah the Almighty is giving, there is never anything insufficient. While narrating an incident regarding the miracle of divine protection, Hazrat Musleh Maud, may Allah be pleased with him, says, I will present an example of divine protection from the life of the promised Messiah alayhi salam. The promised Messiah alayhi salam had a strong bond with the father of Qamar Seen Sahib, who was a principal of the Law College in Lahore. So much so that when the promised Messiah was in need of money, he sometimes used to take a loan from him. This Qamar Seen Sahib was a Hindu. Qamar Seen Sahib was also very sincere towards the promised Messiah. During the lawsuit in Jhelum, he sent his son a telegram that he should represent the promised Messiah in the case. The reason for this sincerity was that during his younger days, when he used to live together in Sialkot with the promised Messiah and some other friends, he had witnessed numerous signs shown by the promised Messiah alayhi salam. One of those signs is that the promised Messiah was once sleeping with his friends at night, when he, the promised Messiah alayhi salam, woke up, and it was placed in his heart that the house is in danger. The promised Messiah alayhi salam woke everyone up and said that the house is in danger, so therefore we should leave from here immediately. Nobody paid attention due to their slumber, and they went back to sleep saying that he was being overly suspicious. But the promised Messiah alayhi salam's feeling continued to get stronger. At last, the promised Messiah woke them up once again and directed their attention to some noise coming from the roof. He said, we should vacate this property. His friends replied, it is something normal. The wood can be damaged by wood insects and can cause noise. Why are you disturbing our sleep? The promised Messiah on whom be peace once again insisted that you all should listen to me and just leave. At last, everyone agreed to leave after being compelled. Since the promised Messiah was certain that for his safety, God is preventing the house from collapsing, thus the promised Messiah alayhi salam told everyone else to leave before him. He said he would leave after. When everyone left and the promised Messiah came out, he set his foot on the ladder when the entire roof collapsed. Now look, the promised Messiah was not an engineer, that he was able to examine the condition of the roof and conclude that it was about to fall. Moreover, until the promised Messiah insisted and continued to wake people up, the roof remained in its place. And until he left, it stayed in its place. But as soon as the promised Messiah raised his foot, the roof fell to the ground. This matter proves that this event was no coincidence. Rather, a guardian was holding this house together until the promised Messiah alayhi salam, whose safety was the main objective of this guardian, left this house. Hence, the attribute of guardianship is testimony over a being with no plan, and it is a living witness for it. Then, similarly, Hadhrat Musleh Maud narrates another incident of Allah the Almighty's treatment towards the promised Messiah on whom be peace. He says that the promised Messiah on whom be peace used to say that once I mounted on a horse-drawn cart and departed from Amritsar. A very obese Hindu man also mounted on the same carriage with me. He sat in the carriage before I did, and for his comfort he spread his legs so much so that the seat in front of him where I was going to sit was also occupied, and therefore access to the seat was obstructed. So the promised Messiah alayhi salam says that I sat down in a very tight place. In those days the heat of the sun was intense. It was so much so that a person would lose his senses. In order to protect me from the sun, Allah the Almighty sent a small cloud which followed our carriage along the way and provided shade the entire journey to Batala. After witnessing this scene, the Hindu said, "You seem like a great saint of Allah the Almighty." Hence, Allah the Almighty treats His servants in such ways that leaves a person astonished. But this is conditional to servitude towards God the Almighty, and the end of such a person will most surely be good. Apparently, such a person is seen as being disgraced in the view of the world, but ultimately, he will obtain respect. Apparently, he will be defamed, but in the end, he will come out honored. So this person's beginning will be from servitude towards God, and finally, will be by praying for help and protection. That is, if one becomes a true servant and worshipper of Allah the Almighty, and worships Him and elects His slavery, then support of Allah the Almighty is always encompassing, and Allah the Almighty provides support against every evil. While narrating the difference between an ordinary saint and a messenger sent by Allah the Almighty, and the righteous effect the messenger impresses upon others, the reformation of his followers, and his pain for humanity, Hadhrat Musleh Maud, may Allah be pleased with him, giving an example of this, says, while citing Munshi Ahmad Jan Sahib of Ludhiana, the promised Messiah alayhi salam said that Hadhrat Munshi Ahmad Jan Sahib of Ludhiana passed away before the promised Messiah alayhi salam's claim. But Munshi Sahib's spiritual insight was so strong and sharp that even before the claim of the promised Messiah, he wrote to the promised Messiah on whom be peace the couplet that, all of us who are sick are looking towards you, so become the Messiah for the sake of God. Munshi Ahmad Jan Sahib advised his children that I am now dying, but always remember that Mirza Sahib, that is the promised Messiah on whom be peace, will most surely make a claim, and it is my will that you should accept Mirza Sahib. In short, he was a person of such a spiritual status. In his youth, he served his spiritual guide like an ox operating in a millstone. His spiritual guide had appointed him to operate a millstone which is pulled by an ox so that the millstone operates. And for 12 years, he grinded flour for him. Then, this spiritual guide that he previously followed taught him lessons for spirituality. That is, after 12 years, when he grinded the millstone like an ox, then his spiritual guide gave him some lessons of spirituality. So he says that the so-called spiritual people of that time, who were the spiritual guides, were very miserly and stingy in sharing spiritual teachings, but not only did the promised Messiah alayhi salatu wassalam, on whom be peace, share all those things with the world, rather he shared things which were thousands of times greater than what had been shared before, and things which people were not previously aware of. In this way, the promised Messiah alayhi salam disseminated knowledge in the entire world. However, in accordance with the hadith, the world did not honor him. Thus, those who appear to have spiritual prowess cannot compete with such a person whom God the Almighty has Himself appointed for the reformation of mankind and to increase their spirituality and draw them closer to God the Almighty. as the promised Messiah on whom be peace has stated, that the task for which I have been appointed for is to remove the malaise and discord that has emerged between God Almighty and His creation, and to re-establish the relationship of love and sincerity. The promised Messiah further stated, his task is to disclose the religious truths that have become concealed from the eyes of the world, and to demonstrate the model of spiritual excellence that has been suppressed under the darkened souls. He states that above all, it is to once again sow the eternal plant of pure and radiating Tawheed, the unity of Allah the Almighty, within the people, which is free from shirk, idolatry, and had become obliterated. May Allah the Almighty enable us to fulfill the duty of our bayt, the pledge of initiation, and establish a relationship with God the Almighty, and to put into practice the religious truths after recognizing them. May we excel in spirituality and partake from the radiance of the true Tawheed, and may God the Almighty also enable the world to recognize this, and especially enable the Muslim Ummah to understand the anguish the promised Messiah alayhi salam had for Islam and to enter his bayt. After the prayers, I shall lead two funeral prayers in absentia. One of them is of respected Noman Ahmad Anjum Sahib, son of respected Chaudhry Maqsood Ahmad, Malir Rifai Arm Society. The opponents of Ahmadiyyat martyred respected Noman Ahmad Sahib on 21st March 2015. In Karachi, at his shop, and firing shots at him in the evening around 7:45. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Surely to Allah we belong and to Him we shall return. At the time, the deceased was at his shop around 7:45 when two armed assailants arrived there and fired shots. One of the bullets struck his heart and pierced through. A nearby shopkeeper phoned his brother, respected Usman Ahmed Sahib, and informed him, and also called the rescue service, who immediately came to the shop. Noman Sahib had sustained severe injuries and attained martyrdom while on his way to the hospital. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Ahmadiyyat entered the deceased family through his paternal grandfather, respected Chaudhry Manzoor Ahmed Sahib, son of respected Chaudhry Karimuddin Sahib, who did the bayt in the time of the second Khalifa. Chaudhry Manzoor Ahmed Sahib's parents passed away at a very early age. After the demise of his parents, Chaudhry Manzoor Sahib went to Qadian, where he had the good fortune of doing the bayt. He acquired his early education in Qadian, and it was also in Qadian that he got married to respected Safiya Sadiqa Sahiba, daughter of Mubarak Ali Sahib. And after the creation of Pakistan, they moved to Haripa Sahiwal. The father of the deceased, respected Maqsood Ahmed Sahib, was born in Rabwa, but they later shifted from there because the deceased grandfather settled in Gujranwala due to his employment in 1968. He settled there with his family. In 1974, when the outbreaks occurred in Gujranwala, the deceased grandfather, Chaudhry Manzoor Ahmed Sahib, and his two uncles, Mahmood Ahmed Sahib and Sayyid Ahmed Sahib, were also martyred. And so there were three martyrs in their family previously. In light of their circumstances, their family shifted to Karachi in 1976. Noman Ahmed Anjum Sahib was born in Karachi on 26 January 1985 and did an MBA as part of his educational qualifications, after which he opened his own business of computer hardware in 2008. By the grace of God the Almighty, the deceased was a Musi. He was extremely trustworthy, kind-hearted, pious, noble and sociable. He was a very sincere and devoted young man. He treated his employees like his younger brothers. He had gifted computers and other related equipment to the computer institution set up by the community in Nagarpar, Kurmiti, and also to the Mission House. He had a great desire to open a computer institution on his grandfather's name, Chaudhry Manzoor Ahmed Sahib, and that is why he had gifted some computers and equipment to the Computer Institute in Kurmiti. He was a very loved person, and even the non-Ahmadis described him as an angel. At the time, he was serving as the Qaid of the Majlis, Rifai Armed Society. He was someone who gave precedence to his faith over worldly matters and strived in the activities of the community. He would often receive threats made to him by the opponents of Ahmadiyyat, but he always told his younger brothers to be careful. 6 months ago, he was bringing some equipment back for his business and was stopped by some unknown assailants who took the equipment and also his money, and told them they had actually come to kill him, but because they found some money, therefore they would let him go. The deceased leaves behind his father, respected Chaudhry Maqsood Ahmed Sahib, his mother, respected Safiya Sadika Sahiba, and two brothers, Zishan Mahmood and Usman Mahmood. May God the Almighty elevate the deceased status and grant his loved ones, parents and brothers the ability to bear this loss. Khuram Ahmed Sahib is a muallim. He states that he was very soft-spoken, loving, and had a passion for serving the community. As mentioned before, he would often go to install the equipment, and many times he would arrive in Nagarpar having travelled a great distance, as it was situated deep in the area of Sindh. He would be asked to take some rest before starting the work, but he would always reply that we are mujahid, ones who strive, and do not think that just because we are from the city, we are weak. He would always be ready to offer his services. Mansoor Sahib, a former guide of the area, mentions that he knew him from the age of 12. He would always take part in the works of the community, and when he was in Atfal, and in competitions with great passion and zeal. He would always attain a position, and would always strive to come first, and was never satisfied with coming second or third. After school, he would go to his father's shop and help him, but alongside this, he would also carry out his Jamaat responsibilities. And it seemed as if he did not give enough time to his personal or household affairs as compared to the time he gave towards the Jamaat work. He never wasted his time like other young men. He would speak with extreme humility and meekness. He is a relative of Tommy Kalon Sahib, who states that their family tried to convince him to leave Pakistan and insisted a great deal. However, he was not happy to leave Pakistan. Imran Tahir Sahib, a missionary of the Jamaat, states that he was also my relative, and never in 20 years have I ever seen him shout at anyone or speak harshly to anyone. He was an image of humility, meekness, and kindness. He was very well-mannered and a loving person. One of his female cousins in Canada states that in light of the circumstances in Karachi, we advised him to migrate from Pakistan, but he always disregarded the circumstances and chose to live with his mother in Pakistan, and he would take care of his mother's every desire and need. Mashood Hassan Khalid Sahib, a missionary, states that one day we were having a conversation with the deceased, in which he said that, who are those good fortunate people who become martyrs? Perhaps it was because of this desire that God Almighty granted him this status. May Allah the Almighty elevate his station. The second janaza or funeral is of respected engineer Farooq Ahmed Khan Sahib, who is a Naib Amir, the vice president of the Peshawar Jamaat. Farooq Ahmed Khan Sahib was the son of respected Mahmood Ahmed Khan Sahib. He was travelling back to Peshawar from Rabwa after attending the Shura, when the tyre of the car burst, as a result of which the accident occurred, and he fell out of the vehicle and landed on the Jakwal Road. He sustained a lot of injuries and the highway police immediately took him to the hospital, but he was unable to survive. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Surely to Allah we belong and to Him we shall return. Ahmadiyyat entered Farooq Sahib's family through his grandfather, Ahmad Gul Sahib, who did the bayt at the hand of Hazrat Khalifa Tumasi I, but withdrew from his bayt during the time of the second Khalifa. He joined those who do not accept the Khalifa. Later, Farooq Khan Sahib did the bayt himself in 1989 and entered the Jamaat, and his two brothers also did the bayt after this. He was born in 1954 and completed his education in mining engineering and then worked for the government's mining department. In 1985, he was married into an Ahmadi family. He was a very sociable, pious and noble person. He also served as a secretary for Islah or Ishad in Peshawar. By the grace of God the Almighty, the deceased was a Musi. May God the Almighty forgive him and have mercy upon him. He leaves behind his wife and two sons, who are 25 and 17 years of old, and also one daughter. May Allah the Almighty grant them patience and courage.
Alhamdulillah. الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونؤمن به ونتوكل عليه ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له ونشهد ان لا اله الا الله ونشهد ان محمدا عبده ورسوله عباد الله رحمكم الله ان الله يامر بالعدل واللسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر والبغي يعظكم لعلكم تذكرون اذكروا الله يذكركم وادعوه يستجب لكم وَلَذِكْرُ اللَّهِ أَكْبَرُ أَوْ